If you allow me to use a series of dots to get to the point where we want to go to, charity, thinketh no evil. Charity thinketh no evil is the text I want to think about this morning. And I want to think about it under the title, See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Our hearts line up with all manner of iniquity. And it seems to be that evil thoughts is the first that comes out of the blocks. Jesus Christ said, for from within, out of the heart of man, proceed evil thoughts. And then he goes on to mention 8 other vices that follow. But the quickest, if you want to think of it in those terms, is evil thoughts. It seems to beat all the other iniquity out of our heart. And isn't that what you find by experience? That you see something, or you hear something, or you encounter something, which might act like a sort of a firing pistol, starting a race off. And first out of the blocks is evil thoughts, or evil thoughts. Evil thoughts seems to get away, not just so quickly out of the blocks of our heart, but it gets away so effortlessly. Evil thoughts gets away so easily. We don't have to give them any encouragement. Evil thoughts just go. Just so easily and quickly. Very often, they pass their baton on to any one of their relay partners, their fornications or thefts and covetousness and wickedness. Before we knew anything about it, evil thoughts has done its dirty work. Paul gives us a list which is very contrasting to the list which Christ speaks about. He gives us a list of virtues which come out of the heart of a Christian man. And one of those on the list is that a Christian man, a Christian woman, thinks no evil. Or, as it's put here, charity thinketh no evil. From within, out of the heart of a Christian man, proceeds no evil thoughts. Or, at least, that's what we aim for. We should aim out of our hearts that no evil thoughts come. Now, we know that the scriptures tell us that finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true and whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, Paul says in Philippians 4, think on these things. I suppose you could say he covers all the bases there in terms of what we're to think on. But here in 1 Corinthians 13:5, at the end of verse 5, it seems to be a little bit narrower what's to engage our minds rather than what he has in mind there in Philippians. And I say that because this word logizomai, this word thinketh, the Greek word logizomai, charity thinketh. This word thinketh or logizomai is a term which is used in the accountancy profession. It was what accountants would have used, or the terminology which we have found in an accountant's office and so forth. It has connotations to do with accountancy. And it has so in two different ways. Both of them are equally legitimate. Both of them are equally legitimate ways of understanding this word thinketh, this word logizomai, the Greek for it. Both of them are consistent. They're different, they're nuanced, but they're two sides of the one coin of charity. Firstly, there is one That's found in some modern translations. Now, once you mention modern translations, and I'm no advocate, by the way, of modern translations, but once you mention modern translations, very often those of us who would adhere to the authorized version, very often we say, well, this must be wrong now. If it's in one of the modern versions, it must be wrong. But it's not wrong, because this is a legitimate interpretation or translation of the word thinketh, the word legizomai, because it has two sides to it, two legitimate sides to it. And so you find in some of the modern translations, it's put in these terms: charity keeps no account of wrongs. I don't advocate new translations, but I do advocate that. Charity keeps no account of wrongs. Or charity does not take into account a wrong suffered. Now you can see right away this idea of accountancy coming through. Charity keeps no account. Does not take into account wrongs committed against it. It's the idea really that love doesn't log all the wrongs that are committed against us, or perhaps committed against our loved ones. Love doesn't keep a record, a ledger of evils perpetrated against us or against those around us. Charity does not enter wrongs done to us or to those around us in a permanent ledger. It doesn't put it down in the black and white. If you think of charity as a bookkeeper, as an accountant, as a woman, no way. She's a very bad bookkeeper. She doesn't fill in all the lodgements that she could do, whenever someone has wronged her or those around her. And it's needful, it's necessary as Christians that we do not take account of wrongs committed against us and put them down in a permanent ledger. Because once they're down in a permanent register, once they're registered in our minds, once they've been filed away at the back of our minds, in the back of our memories, it's all too easy, and we all know this to be true, it's all too easy just to go to the back of our minds, to go to the top drawer of our minds and just pull out what someone did to us or to another around us, or said to us or said to one around us. And what do? We review the whole thing again. We look at all the different parts of it, when it happened, who it was. We hear their words. We see their. We remember the tone of their voice. We remember all about it. And what do then? Whenever we're looking up the files, looking up the books, what do? Well, we think to ourselves the way an accountant would think to himself. We would say, I don't think I ever got around to settling up on that matter. I don't think I ever got around to repaying what should have been repaid. That's the way evil thoughts work. That's where evil thoughts take you. Whenever you keep a register, whenever you keep an account of things that have been done wrong to us. In other words, in keeping with the preceding fruit of charity, keeping a permanent record, keeping a record, taking an account, logging it down of what a person has done to us, what does it do? It easily provokes us. It easily provokes us. Whenever we turn to the accounts, to the ledger, to the logbook, what do? Very often we find we want to get the books even. And the only way to get the books even is to get the person even. Evil thoughts. Charity must be a very bad bookkeeper, because she doesn't want to get the books even. She doesn't. Or, there's another way of thinking about it also. It's not necessary that you file it away at the back of your memory, somewhere at the very back, so you never really lose it. It's there if you want to call upon it. But sometimes you can just sort of thumbtack it to the front of your mind. Staple it to the front of your mind, so it's there all the day long. So no matter where you go about in your business, it's never far away what someone did to you, which wronged you, or wronged another one around you. It's never out of sight. And because it's always there, you just never get around to doing anything about it. And it, what does it do? It daily provokes us to evil thoughts. It daily provokes us to a sort of bitterness against the person, a sort of festering resentment against the person. It's just an open sore. Either way, keeping an account, logizomai, keeping a ledger of evils is contrary to the law of love. Contrary to the law of love your neighbour, and contrary to the law, and it's a law also, to love yourself. For in thinking evil thoughts about revenge, your neighbour suffers. In thinking evil thoughts of resentment, you suffer. We suffer. Thoughts of evil, which are easily provoked by keeping an account and keeping a ledger. Thoughts of evil, thoughts of evil against another. That's just murder. If you hate your brother in your heart, it's just murder. And if you think of it in terms of resentment or terms of malice, it's just self-murder. Keeping a ledger, an account of evils done, it destroys. It destroys us. It's not good for us. It's self-harm. It's actually self-harm. Now, as I say, you mightn't be happy to accept the modern versions of the Bible. That's fine. I'm happy to go along with that myself. Whenever it says, love keeps no account of wrongs, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't throw it out. Because some of us are better at doing this than others. Some of us have got minds which are so fertile in evil thoughts, so quick off the blocks, that we would need a secretary sometimes to record all the entries that we make as life goes through. In work, we're friends with our neighbours, in the church, wherever it might be. Some of us have been hurt many times. Perhaps most of us have been hurt many times. And perhaps some of us are more prone to others than putting it down, for posterity's sake. All of us, I'm sure, at one time or another, have kept a record of wrongs done against you. And you know what we do sometimes? We audit the books. We bring them out into the public domain and we audit them. We want everybody else to know how we were wronged. We want everybody else to know how we were harmed by somebody else. We read and we reread. We're able to go over the incident. It happened some time ago, but we never forget it. It's as fresh today as it was then. And the just thing festers and festers. We're a wee bit like Cain Azahurus. Remember what he did? He couldn't sleep at night. And he brought the books out. Remember? Worked out well for Mordecai. But we can do the other thing. Because we can lie in bed at night when we can't sleep and bring the books out. That's when I find that I often go back into the drawer in the filing cabinet and pull the books out. At night time. And lie and think about what somebody did to me or did to a friend or a loved one. And think, now what would I do to dishonour the man who has so hurt me? We can do it. We do it. We do it very easily. We do it very naturally. And we shouldn't do it. We shouldn't do it. There should be no wee black books in the Christian's top pocket. No names. No times of when and what and how. Charity compels the Christian to do what the Christians did in Acts chapter 19, verse 19. Because many of them brought out their curious books of arts and they burnt them all together in a great pain. And you know what? Those books that they burnt there in Acts chapter 19, their curious arts, the black arts, they're no more evil. They're no more evil than keeping an account of how people have wronged us. There's something devilish about that. It's certainly not Christian. It's opposite to God. It's opposite to the gospel. What is the message of the gospel? The message of the gospel is that God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself. Not logizomai. Not accounting their trespasses onto them. Aren't we thankful that God's ledger of his people's sins were once and for all visited at Calvary? Aren't we thankful that the debt has been settled? That Christ has made it even? That he has satisfied it all? That all of those handwritings against us, haven't they been taken out of the way, being nailed to the cross? That's the message of the gospel. God doesn't revisit the books, doesn't keep the ledger. That's the gospel. It's the gospel we're meant to personify, to live out, to adorn in our lives. Micah 7:19 reassures us that God has cast all our sins in the depths of the sea. The wrongs done against God are like sparks that fall into the sea of his love and are quenched by Jesus Christ. So the Christian should aim for that. Love, charity, compels us to do so, to keep no account of evils, of wrongs. But there's a second understanding of the word thinketh that we have, or logizomai. A different way to understand it. And it has the idea, once again, it's an accountancy term, but it has the idea of imputing. You know that imputing or crediting, of course it is an accountancy term. It's to credit to one's account, to place into one's account, to impute to one's account. The gospel, at the very heart of it, has this idea of imputation, doesn't it? What happens in the gospel? There is the imputations of the obedience of Christ, the righteousness of Christ. We are credited. We are reckoned. We are accounted. We who are sinners, to be as righteous as Christ through this imputation, through justification. It's the great transfer from Christ to us. That which is imputed to the penitent's account is sometimes described as what? It's sometimes described as an alien righteousness which is imputed to us. Why is it called an alien righteousness? It's because it's something outside of us. It's not something inherent. It's not something which belongs to us. It comes from another. It comes from outside of us. It's got a different source altogether. It's an alien righteousness which is imputed to us. That's the gospel. It's part of the gospel. It's part and parcel of justification. Now you're saying perhaps, what's this got to do with 13 verse 5? And charity thinketh no evil. Well, it's got this to do with it. Charity does not impute evil to our neighbour from the outside. There may be nothing inherently evil about a person's words or deeds, or lack of words or lack of deeds. There may be nothing evil about it at all.
But what can we do sometimes? We can impute an alien evil to their deeds. We can credit an alien evil to their words. Charity doesn't do that. It doesn't credit with evil. It doesn't account evil. It doesn't impute evil motives to somebody's actions or words and so forth. God, in an act of infinite charity to poor sinners, imputed righteousness to them whose works didn't deserve it. A righteousness from the outside imputed to us whose works didn't deserve it. What can we do? What does man do sometimes? Man is able to impute unrighteousness to his neighbour whose works don't deserve it. The law of charity insists that you're not to credit, that you're not to impute an alien unrighteousness to someone's works. Nothing from the outside of our evil hearts, of our evil thoughts. Charity, in other words, doesn't think the worst of your neighbour's actions, of your neighbour's words, of your neighbour's motives. Charity does not place an ill construction on your neighbour's works. Charity is not suspicious of what they say and what they do. Charity doesn't read into their words what's not there. Charity does not infer evil from their actions. Charity doesn't imply evil to somebody, what they've done, what they've said, and so forth. It's what Satan did. It's what Satan did. He couldn't read Job's heart. He didn't know what was going on in Job's heart. And what did he say to God? What was the reason for Job's adherence to God and his faithfulness and his godliness? What did Satan say to God? Satan said it's because of what he gets. Because you put a fence around him. Because you've blessed him. What was he doing? He was doing this very thing. Satan was imputing into Job ill motives, an ill lifestyle, ill words. It's devilish. It's a devilish thing. And that's how it goes. That's how it goes. And that's how it goes so very, very easily and so very, very quickly. Something that somebody says which is very innocuous. And what do we know? Evil thoughts, in some of us more than others, is first out of the blocks. And the old man begins to race. And it races. And it says, well, what did they mean by that? And right away, you're placing some sort of question mark over that person. You've no right to do that. Charity doesn't give you the right to do that. Charity thinketh no evil. What do? We say, well, I heard what they said, but I know what they meant. Well, maybe they did. Maybe they did. But charity becomes us not to think evil. Not to think evil. What do we say? I know they're little gear. Well, do we? Are we omniscient? Do we know their little game? Are we able to read somebody's hearts? Can we do what Christ does? I think they're up to something. Yes, you think it. But is that what charity thinks? I think they've got a hidden agenda. I think that they're after something. I think they know why they haven't bothered getting in touch. So if he doesn't get in touch, and we can put an ill construct on it. I think I know why somebody seemed off today at the door.
do we? That's just evil thoughts. And charity thinketh no evil thoughts. You see what we're doing in these things, and we do it just very easily, very easily. Well, at least I do. This is the second time I've preached this. I could preach it to myself probably every day of the week. But what are we doing? We're imputing evil. We have no grounds to do so. Crediting, accounting evil to somebody's words and actions and so forth to their account. Man's mind is capable of calculating the land mass of the moon. And man is also capable of adding two and two of somebody's actions or somebody's words and coming up with five. Isn't that right? We can take somebody's words, we can take someone's actions, and like we can use it like a Rubik's Cube. Remember the Rubik's Cubes? We can just twist it and twist it and twist it until the whole thing that the person said or the whole thing that they did, it's just a mess. It's not what they meant at all. And neither they did mean it. We had no right to think of it. Charity thinketh no evil. Charity doesn't play the blankety blank game. Charity doesn't try to fill in the blanks. Because charity thinketh no evil thoughts. Charity is not a spin doctor putting an evil intent upon people's actions and words. Whenever an evil atmosphere like that, whenever that's to be found, if a person is particularly like that, they're going to get themselves into all sorts of trouble. If it happens, it can happen anywhere, can't it? It can happen in families. It does happen in families. It can happen in churches, church family. It can happen anywhere. It can happen anywhere. We have an example of it happening in the church in Joshua chapter 22, this very thing. So the conquest of Canaan has taken place. The 2.5 tribes of Israel are returning to their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan, aren't they? And whenever they are about to cross the Jordan, that's the tribe of Reuben and the tribe of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh. What did they do just before they crossed the Jordan to take up their inheritance on the other side? Well, they built their own altar. They built an altar. And we read in the same chapter, in verse 12, when the children of Israel heard of it. The whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh to go to war against them. They were going to start a war because they had built an altar, or they'd heard they had built an altar. What was going through their minds when they heard this? Well, they were thinking evil. They were imputing evil to the building of the altar. In verse 16, they accuse the 2.5 tribes. Ye have builded an altar, that ye might rebel this day against the Lord. Now, where did that come from? Well, we know where it came from. Out of the heart of man proceeds evil thoughts. You've built an altar to fall down before it, and to worship idols, that ye might rebel against the Lord. They were crediting the 2.5 tribes with that which they never intended. They were imputing an alien unrighteousness to their actions. The 2.5 tribes constructed an altar, and the 9.5 tribes constructed an hypothesis, and they were going to go to war over the head of it. And that's what happens. It happens everywhere. It can happen in the pulpit. A preacher may stand up and preach a sermon someday, and somebody in the congregation may say, he's having a wee go at me today. If a preacher uses the pulpit for that purpose, he's abusing the pulpit. But you see, what the person has done is thinking, that's for me. That's been aimed at me.
That's just this very thing. Charity thinketh no evil thoughts. And I can go on, and I can go on, and could go on. And the 2.5 tribes, they protested their innocence. You've got this all wrong, they say to the other tribes. You've got it all wrong. They say in verse 26 and 27, the only reason that we built that altar there was that we might do service to the Lord before it. You see what happened? They wanted it for good. They had a good reason behind it. But they imputed a bad reason. You know, there's a restaurant up in Glengormley, owned by Christians. And I drove past a few months ago on several Lord's days, and there was people in the restaurant. And my first thought was, Christians opening the Lord's Day. And I went past every week for a number of weeks, and I was a wee bit perturbed that they'd opened to serve on the Lord's Day. And you know what happened? I found out months later that they weren't serving at all. That there was a Sunday school meeting in there. That there was a Bible class. That some other church were getting some work done to their church and their meeting house. And they know where to put the young people. So they asked the restaurant, can we use this for a Bible study? You see what happened? You see what happens? Do you ever do anything like that? Or is it just me? Is it just my heart? I found over the years that I'm very bad at second guessing other people's motives. I nearly always get it wrong. And you might say, well, perhaps you mustn't have much discernment. Well, you know what? A better response would be, you mustn't have much love for even trying. You see, it's not that charity presumes innocent until proven guilty. No, it's more than that. Charity doesn't even raise an eyebrow, much less an accusation. Our brothers and sisters in Christ give us plenty of reasons, tangible reasons, concrete reasons, sinful reasons, to accuse them. Without us imagining reasons against them. Isn't that right? Matthew Henry says, love puts the best face that it can on circumstances that have no good appearance. Charity puts the best face that it can on circumstances that have no good appearance. You know what charity does? Charity makes every word and work that somebody does like an Esther to look upon. Remember, Esther was purified, wasn't it, after the days of her purification? She was beautiful. Charity looks upon other people's words and actions and motives as if it were the face of an Esther. As if it's been purified. Doesn't think wrong. Charity is not disingenuous. Charity instead is ingenious at finding ways to think good about a person's works and actions. Charity wears rose-tinted glasses. But what about being harmless as a dove and wise as a serpent? Charity finds a way to bring it all together. It wears rose-tinted glasses. Thomas Mann says, Charity would rather impute it to their inconsideration. When someone does wrong us, charity would rather impute, says Mann, impute it to their inconsideration rather than to their malice. Mann saying, there was no real malice in Martha said. You just weren't thinking right. There's a difference there. There's a difference there. That's what the Lord does, actually. That's the Lord does that. You think about all of your good works or my good works, all of them, God could very easily put an ill face on them all. They're all flawed. All of them are flawed. All of them could be as ill-favoured in their face as Leo was. But the Lord looks upon our works as fair and lovely to him as Rachel's. The book of Hebrews, it has a list of characters with all of their works, and their faces are full of freckles. Full of freckles. The list of them. And what does the Lord do? The Lord makes Hebrews chapter 11 a catwalk of good works. God thinketh no evil. He always sees you, Christian, in the best possible light. That's the light of love. It's the light of charity. And the law of love for your neighbour, the law of the gospel, commands us to walk also in this best possible light. Whenever next time you feel your evil thoughts about what somebody has said or what somebody's done, about their motivation behind it, whenever evil thoughts is first out of the block, whenever it's first out of the block and wants to put an evil construct upon what they've said or what they've done and what they meant, you fire the pistol again. False start. False start. Get them back. Charity thinketh no evil thoughts. It doesn't allow casting assertions. It doesn't allow the shadows of suspicion. And you know what? You see, if you're taken for a mug at the end of it all, because you were right, or because they were up to something, even if you are taken for a mug, it's better that charity was your motive. So you want a summary of the day of the message. It's very, very easy to take it home with you. See no evil. Hear no evil. See no evil. See no evil. Record books or ledgers of accounts of wrong to look up. To look up. And hear no evil. Hear no evil voices in your head about your neighbour. Oh, what did they mean? What did they mean? See no evil. Hear no evil.